You're listening to Podcasting Paradigms with David Truss. Please join me on a trip into Haliburton, Ontario, where Joseph Truss and I discuss the building blocks of the universe. This conversation assumes the conjecture that we live in a tetraverse. That is the title of a first video in a series called The Book of Codes. You can find it by searching my name, David Truss, and we live in a tetraverse, T-E-T-R-A-V-E-R-S-E. Watch this video first to appreciate the premise of our conversation. A conjecture is defined as an opinion or conclusion formed on the basis of incomplete information. Joe is challenging the way mathematicians and physicists look at the universe today. Most perspectives put us in a three-dimensional world based on three axes, X, Y, and Z. Joe says these are necessary but not sufficient, and that while we can do calculations based on this model of the universe, it will always require us to work with irrational numbers and rounding errors. But it's all a question of resolution. Go deeper than the perspective of XYZ and you encounter a universe built on triangles, or more specifically, tetrahedrons. In a way, his premise is that working in a cube-based XYZ universe is conjecture. It is working on the basis of incomplete information. If we recognize that the smallest possible object in the universe at the Planck length is a tetrahedron and not a cube, again, see, we live in a tetraverse to gain this insight. This doesn't dismiss any calculations done in a cube universe. It simply allows greater resolution and maybe eliminates the need to work with irrational numbers and rounding of decimals. A simple metaphor for this would be moving from the imperial system of measurement to the metric system, measuring in millimeters instead of 16ths of an inch. Admittedly, this is a bit of a challenging conversation to follow. First, because we start talking about waves as seen drawn in two dimensions on paper, and so the conversation is lacking some visual descriptions we discuss. Secondly, because we have discussed these ideas at length previously, we are quite comfortable describing the shapes and making connections that are not so easy to visualize when you haven't had the same background conversations we've had. And yet, I felt that the conversation needed to be shared to bring light to some of the brilliant insights of Joseph Truss. One specific topic we discussed that I haven't seen anywhere else is the idea that infinity is a fractal. And now, please join Joe and I shortly after we walk down to a slow-moving river that adjoins his backyard. Joe, a musician as well as geometer, brought his drums with him, and after playing a bit, we started this conversation. I quickly realized that this was worth recording, and so I walked back to the house to get my phone. The podcast starts with Joe playing the drums and me walking back to him. There's also a drum interlude in the middle of this podcast, as well as the end. So pull up a seat next to us and enjoy this riverside conversation.
Quantizes, right?
Yeah, it's right there.
Oh, yeah, the brain quantizes. You see, the brain can't follow a continuous stream. It makes no sense, right? So I can play a rhythm that's faster than my brain. And what my brain will do is my brain will bring it back, quantize it down to the rhythm mm-hmm. that I can count. In terms of what's going on.
And that you were talking about unit one, and they said, you know, who cares if it's one or 1.2? It matters, because it's a wave.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, if a wave is a wave.
So, right. And the beautiful thing about waves is you have something called the Fourier transform.
The what?
The Fourier, F-O-U-R-A-R, Fourier, he was a scientist. And what he showed, again, mathematically, is that every wave can be deconstructed into its multiple sine waves.
Right.
Right? So I put any wave into a Fourier transform, and it will give me all of the sub, all in sine waves. The sine wave is the perfect wave, right? Mm-hmm. So some waves are shaped like this, some waves are shaped like that. You deconstruct that, which is why the wave is a fractal.
Yes.
Right? So when I look at a wave and I say, okay, here's the slope of the wave, right? Up to there, mm-hmm. The wave comes down. So what I'm really drawing is this, right? This is the wave. The sound is moving like this. That's how the wave is propagating. Right. Not like this, up and down, right?
Yeah, it's three-dimensional. It's not just...
Exactly.
We see it in that 2D format,
right,
of just an up and down, but that's three-dimensional.
Is the whole thing is going like this. Now, yeah. So, like a question...
A water droplet, like if I drop a stone into the...
Right. And you get the ripples.
Yeah, you get those ripples.
That are moving
over.
Yeah,
that's not a single wave up and down that you see.
Right.
And then if you follow those waves, that's...
Right. So I can stop that and say, okay, here's how the wave, the crest of the wave is moving in the water. Mm-hmm. And I can draw that. And that's basically what we're doing when we talk about a wave. But there are a couple of misinformed assumptions just in that simple diagram. Number one is that it's part of the cube, it's part of XYZ, it's not, it's part of the tetra.
Yes.
Right? Seven, you have seven directions in two ways. XYZ is six directions, up, down, right, left, forward, backwards. Mm-hmm. And in those six directions, everything that you can specify in that space, you can specify. That's
absolutely
it.
Yeah, but you don't see a wave.
Right? But the wave is operating at a unit that's below the one that you're taking as your unit one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The wave is moving across, your cube is like this, and the wave is moving across this way, inside that way.
Yeah.
I have to shift the entire perspective like this to see this,
mm-hmm.
Right? To see the wave movement, which is a triangular movement, not a cubical movement.
Yes.
In the cube, the wave is 90 degrees, right? 90 degree corners.
Yes.
In a triangle, it's not greater than 60 degrees, right? 60 degrees is basically that is the sine wave, right? The perfect wave that just up and crests exactly the same. So back to the Fourier transform, we have a way in mathematics that's completely accepted in science, that if I give you a wave, you do a Fourier transform, you can give me all of the subcomponent sine waves that make that wave up. Mm-hmm.
And we started this conversation about the periodic table and how beautiful it is and how accurate it is.
Right. So the periodic table is this grid. And when you lay it out properly, you realize that you have one and every seven it repeats.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So nature, again, numerology, right? Seven is a sign of broken symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Right? One of seven is 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, 7 to infinity.
Yes.
Right? And so when you set up the periodic table and you come from here, hydrogen is one, you have to move all the way across to the end to get helium, which is two. And then once you start going like this, all of the electrons, all of the neutrons, all of the protons, which is in the nucleus of every atom, is simply hydrogen, one proton, one electron, double. Yeah. Keep on just, right?
It's a wave.
One to two, it's a wave.
Yeah. And that's where the periodic table is necessary but not sufficient.
Because you're missing some of the... So it's showing you some major connections.
Yeah.
Right, these are rare earth metals. These are... Right?
And without it, you couldn't have discovered so many other things.
Right, exactly. It gives you this wonderful way of counting, but it's a two-dimensional grid.
And that's... that's the flaw. It's two-dimensional.
Not, again, not a flaw.
Yes.
Right. Necessary, but not sufficient.
Yes. Yes. Flaw was the absolute wrong word because the table itself is beautiful.
The table itself is absolutely beautiful. It does what it purports to do, and does so in an incredibly elegant way.
Elegant and accurate.
Now, what I'm looking at is, okay, so this is two dimensions. Yeah. And the way it's set up is that, what are you doing? You're following horizontal and vertical. Mm-hmm. There's actually some parts of the wave that go diagonally. Mm-hmm. Right? There's some parts of it that connect diagonally. But they're all on the same plane, on the two-dimensional plane. So if I can wrap that thing onto a structure, that's what we need to find is the structure. You're going to find connections across that cannot be represented on a two-dimensional grid.
But even when you say diagonally, my mind goes to that 90 degree. But what we need is 60 degrees. We need a triangle, right? So we need a hexagon, three-dimensional way to look at that periodic table, to add that other dimension that you can find those connections.
Right. And there's a part of the table that just they just leave it as undisputed. It's the antonyms, the very bottom. There's a gap, right? Mm-hmm. Somewhere between 70 and whatever, and that gap runs off in this direction. It goes off the page and completely. So you have to list it underneath,
yes.
Right? You have a whole bunch of these two layers of things that don't fit into the periodic table anymore, right? So. In some ways, we've lived with this violation all along.
Yeah.
But it's not a violation.
No.
It's indicating something,
it's
right?
It's indicating that
that you're missing a part.
A two-dimensional table is not enough. It's very good.
It's necessary to actually determine what all the elements are. Yes. We can use that table and determine what all the elements are.
But it's not sufficient
to understand the interconnectivity among those elements that go beyond the vertical, horizontal, and diagonal of a two-dimensional frame.
Yeah.
There are stuff, relationships in a three-dimensional world that go across the inside, like the Enneagram inside the Icosa.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You cannot represent the Enneagram in an Icosa in a two-dimensional frame without flattening the Enneagram, and there you go.
Yeah.
You've lost the actual basis.
Yeah, and you said you would stand before all of the greats to tell them that.
Yeah. So the whole thing here again, which I've conscientiously done all the way through this kind of research, is anchor it in what is happening in physics, what's happening in cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And at that level, I can't find anyone that says to me, what you're talking about is bunk.
Right.
Or, you know, in some way you're violating some scientific thing. And so that's the problem
XYZ
with the Trevor
breaks,
Hose.
Right? XYZ, that breaks for me.
Yeah.
It's again, necessary but not sufficient.
And so the simplest explanation that actually got through to a mathematician when I was in Sri Lanka,
mm-hmm.
is he said to me, well, look, if I can get everything I need into an XYZ cube, into that space, why do I need to have this other tetraverse?
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it came out of his mouth, he went, resolution.
Yes, resolution.
I can get a whole bunch of tetrahedra inside that little cube.
Yeah.
So I can give you a point inside your cube, which is just a point.
Yes.
And I'm going to deconstruct your cube. And that point, he said, I got it.
Yeah.
Right?
That's beautiful.
That was the thing that convinced him that there was something here.
Out of his own mouth.
Out of his own mouth. As he was questioning it, right? He answered his own question.
Resolution.
Because he had gone through enough of it to understand that diagonal, XYZ, square root of 2, and infinity.
Yeah.
Right?
And when we're trying to look at the periodic table, the resolution is...
The resolution is it's called the graininess. It's the graininess, right?
It's enough for us to go... Wait, there's a gap here. Let's go. You know, there has to be another element that we haven't found yet, right?
Right.
Because
but in system theory, you would say forget the elements and look at the connectivity.
Yeah.
The white spaces, not the gray spaces. Right. What's happening in the white space? Completely. Well, it's not completely missed because that's what the vertical and diagonal part of the grid shows you.
The resolution is as far as we need to see that. To see what we need to see.
So that for me was an aha moment, right? Because it started with a question, right? Okay, even if what you're saying is true, I can't deny that what you're saying makes sense logically, but why? Why will I shift? Why should I move from my cubicle representation? And as the words came out of his mouth, right? He said, oh, yeah, resolution. I said, yeah, right? I can put a whole bunch of stuff inside your little cube.
Yeah, resolution.
Right? And once you name that cube as your granular, whatever, as your grain, right? That's your smallest grain. Then you get into infinitesimals and infinity to explain what's happening inside your grain, right? But without doing that, without going to infinities, we can show you the resolution, the absolute minimal resolution that you can achieve in a three-dimensional structure.
And that's the problem with XYZ is you have to do the calculations. It's for us to draw it and make sense. And we can say, okay, so here's unit one and unit one on a square. And now we have to calculate this hypotenuse.
And there comes their old Pythagoras.
Number, right?
And it's because of that, I can determine an unknown with information of two. That was a magic thing that basically cemented everyone into the cubicle number.
And all of our math today says, okay, we know there's these irrational numbers that we have to deal with.
Right?
But there's a rounding error that we can get to this many decimals, and it just doesn't fucking matter anymore. Right? Because when we're calculating, for instance, a trip, looking at gravity and going from Earth and going around the moon.
Right?
You need to factor in a lot of things. But when you get to the seventh decimal, it doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't matter, exactly.
Right? And so when you're drawing that and you're doing the physics of it, the resolution is good enough.
And that is the distinction between engineering and science.
Yeah.
The engineer says, this will fucking work, right? Yes. So who cares that pi is infinite?
Yes.
I can show you that if I take pi to something like 30 decimal places,
yes,
right, I can give you the accurate, almost precise diameter of the universe, yes, down to an atomic distance.
Yes.
And that's just 30 decimal points, so fuck infinite.
Yes.
In terms of engineering, I don't even have machinery that can give me that kind of but as a scientist, mm-hmm, and the numbers are telling me something else, engineering is not good enough. That's one of the ruptures in physics with quantum mechanics.
That's
right?
The
famous thing, right? Shut up and calculate.
The Book of Codes is really about resolution.
It is. It's taking the Planck seriously. It's saying,
yes,
whether or not,
yes,
you actually believe in the quantum realm. We have all this evidence in the Standard Model that it actually exists, right? But so why? Right? You shut up and calculate.
Yeah.
These equations work in the quantum realm. These equations work in Einstein. There's no need for us to bring them together. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Right? That's a whole different thing. Right, but anybody who's really seriously into understanding what the science is telling them, it's not good enough, man.
It's not necessary, but not sufficient.
Not sufficient. Right, engineering says necessary, sufficient.
And so, where the Book of Codes starts is that heartbeat, the wave, the in and the out,
the breath,
the cube octahedron, the triangles emitting all out. Tetra, octatetra, tetra, octatetra, but they don't exist without the intake of air.
And that's your XYZ. We show them with the seven-dimensional model.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
These things work together. They're
six,
inside of each other. One of them
triangles
is a higher resolution,
yeah,
than the other.
Yeah, six opposing squares, all on 90-degree angles with each other. The X, the Y,
and
the Z.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's the return. And unless you think about it as a wave, you don't get it that that's the return. And what is gravity? Gravity is a suck, man.
For all of mankind, it's been necessary because it's easy to do the calculations. It's easy to say, oh, we don't need to go past this many decimals and we can just round. And let's not worry about the fact that, you know, we're trying to calculate on straight lines.
Right.
But the entire fucking universe is a wave.
And then they get into the quantum realm, And they find that this difficulty cannot be just put away.
It can't
it,
be.
It actually becomes insoluble.
Everything is a wave.
Right? Yeah. That's that symbol, man.
Yeah.
Permanent Institute. Right? And so what? So go backwards and think, okay, let's look at it in terms of the wave. Whatever the Big Bang was, right? Forget all the shit, right?
Doesn't matter if something was before it, after it.
Right?
Let's look at that.
The universe is flat. What does that mean? It means that it's spherical.
Yes, flat is, yeah, we say the universe is flat, but for it to be flat, we are recognizing that we are on the surface of a sphere.
Right.
And no matter when you know, if you're standing on the earth looks flat. We can define it as flat, we visually see it as flat.
Yeah.
But you zoom in, you zoom out, you see the resolution.
Exactly.
Right.
From this point of view, you a ship approaching you, you see the mast come up.
Yeah.
You say, fuck, what's going on, right? Yeah, man, that's curvature, buddy.
That's it.
Right?
Resolution. That's
resolution.
It. Resolution.
Right? And so we're saying, right, how can there be possibly a resolution that's deeper, grainier than the Planck constant?
Mm-hmm.
Right? In Einsteinian relativity world, it's infinite. It's continuous. Yeah. There's no break, right?
And that brings me to the beautiful thing that you said that just resonates so well with me, is that infinity is fractal.
It's fractal.
That is so beautiful. And it just explains so much about the problem of infinity.
And that simple explanation, you don't have to get into what is a fractal mathematically. You can do that. But just look at it. Infinity, what's a half of infinity?
Mm-hmm.
What's a quarter? What's a 1,000? Oh, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Whatever that ratio happens to be.
Yeah, double infinity, right? So it goes back to that, I can't remember who spoke about it, but the idea of having rooms, endless number
right,
of
the
rooms.
Hilbert, the Hilbert Hotel, I think it's called.
Hilbert,
I think it is.
Yeah.
It's called the Infinite Hotel.
And so just that idea that you have this infinite number of rooms, but then what if you put a room between each of those rooms? All of a sudden, there's a larger infinite versus a smaller infinite.
Right?
And so that idea of there are different sizes of infinity is necessary but not sufficient, because what it is not recognizing the resolution. It's all the same thing.
It's all the same thing. So if I look at infinity using the cubical measure of the number system, I see infinity along this line. But as you pointed out, I shift it and I go along the diagonal, I'm showing you a different infinity.
Yeah.
And in fact, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where you get
If I'm using unit one, and then I say, well, let's divide that and double it, so that each one is now two.
Two, right.
That's a bigger infinity. But it's not, because going back to that whole idea of infinity is fractal, all you're doing is, when you look at a fractal and you're going in and you see the repeat, if you just shift, zoom, you know, if you slow down, now you can see more space in between each one.
Also, that pattern you're watching on the screen,
but
you'll notice.
That's still infinity. When you change direction and you go diagonal, and all of a sudden there's more space, that suggests a larger infinity. Yeah. And if you want to talk about it, and talk about bigger and smaller infinities, you've just defined, just by changing that angle, that resolution. But if you look at it as a fractal, you're talking about the same thing. You're just looking at it from a different resolution, a different angle. You know, you go into that Mandelbrot set, and you're tunneling. Well, you can shift and surf that plane, and you're still inside the fractal.
Right.
You're completely inside the fractal. What you're seeing, what you're explaining, what you're trying to define could be bigger or smaller or, you know, in the XYZ terms, but it's just a fractal and it's infinite. And I think that's just beautiful. is it?
Get to a speed, I can't, but some people can, where your brain has to quantize. It'll pick a break.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the big question is, does nature quantize?
I would say absolutely.
Right? Because think of the breaking the wave, right?
Yeah.
So pi is infinite. Nature is saying, okay, I gotta calculate this fucking thing to infinity to allow this wave to break. No, the wave breaks.
Yes.
Right. So.
Yeah. A tree can't grow to infinity.
Yeah.
It breaks.
Right. So in our term, why is it breaking? Right. You have the push of the wind and the tides. You have all of that stuff, and you have gravity.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the crest of that wave has nowhere else to go but down.
Yes.
Right. That's the most economical, least energy required for that wave to break.
And that's the beautiful thing about seeing the entire universe as a wave, because gravity is a wave.
Gravity is a wave.
Yeah.
As we just proved with the LIGO, right? We just measured a gravitational wave. For the first time in our technological society, we were actually able to measure, right, a gravitational wave. And a gravitational wave is not just it. When that wave is passing through the universe, right, it's shifting. Every atom in your body, right, gets shifted by that. Less than the diameter of the nucleus of an atom is what they're measuring,
mm-hmm.
right, in that gravitational wave. And from that, the amazing thing now is, because of all the technology, that gravitational wave gives information that they didn't have access to before, right? Because it's not an optical wave.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can follow that wave, it's just like infrared and red and all the Hubble telescope and the new, right? The James Webb telescope.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are just filtering different waves.
Mm-hmm.
Hubble was optical, right?
Yes.
The Webb telescope has got 3 or 4 different frequency ranges, right? And that allows you to see through clouds of dust,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the heat's coming out, and that's what you're measuring. But the heat, that vibration coming from an object,
mm-hmm.
right?
But gravity itself is just a fascinating thing, too.
Right. So gravity is a force according to Newton, and I have an equation that says this is how the force works, but we don't really kind of understand it. And as a matter of fact, it can't be a force because the action is instantaneous,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot have faster than light travel. Nature does not allow that. So we knew from the beginning that the concept of gravity is a force. That's what Einstein finally proved, right? But Newton knew it, right? It was the best description, the best approximation. It was a good enough approximation to get fucking people onto the moon,
good
right?
Enough, necessary.
But GPS would be fucked.
Yes.
If you didn't have the Einsteinian relativity correction.
Yeah.
Right? You'd be out by, 1,000 meters by the time you get to Earth. No fucking use.
Mm-hmm.
So again, resolution, right? I mean, that's the name of the game all the way down. The difference between Newton and Einstein is resolution.
Yeah. How many turtles do you need?
Turtles all the way down.
Yeah, turtles all the way down. But how many do you really need? Yeah. It's beautiful.
And the whole thing again is people say, from the very beginning, right, you're using Euclidean geometry, and we know that that's not what the universe is like,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to use Einstein tensors, right? Because everywhere in space, that there's anything, the space is going to distort.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But how does it distort? not like the rubber sheet in One Direction, it distorts spherically. The entire thing is collapsing into the center, right? Simultaneously.
Yeah.
But to have a geometric model that kind of shows, right, quite clearly these eight directions that are following that, and then you look at the six and you say, hang on, but they line up with XYZ. You say, okay, so this is what XYZ is. XYZ is the return of that wave motion, right? So the explanation of gravity is, so Einstein say, well, okay, it's not a force, it's the curvature of space. Absolutely correct, right? Mm-hmm. The orbit is just, the space around Earth is curved because Earth has a density and the moon's gonna follow that with no violation of speed of light or anything, right? Because it's not a force working, it's just following the geometry of space-time, right? And so that's the first critical thing that I have to overcome, that people are saying, right? You're using Euclidean flat geometry, and that no longer applies. You know that we have to do Einstein tensor, right, to actually understand where you are. And I say, but the universe is flat.
Yes.
In other words, in order to describe a flat universe, you have to use Euclidean geometry. When you get to a place that there's a distortion in space-time, you can add the Einstein to give you better resolution.
Better resolution, yep.
Right?
That's it, because that flat, even just saying the universe is flat.
And then I say,
it's a lack of resolution to realize that flat meaning the surface always of a massive sphere.
That's right. And so the first thing to understand that we
find actually a massive cube octahedron, which is the perfect sphere.
Right. And so back to that again, we draw a tetrahedron with straight lines. Fuck, it's just to simplify it.
Yeah.
But every one of those lines is curved. Put that into a sphere, I can draw the curvature of a tetrahedral edge has a curvature, right?
And again, resolution.
So, right, again, but it's not necessary in the abstracted view of this is a tetrahedron, I use straight lines. But understand, that's not how nature works.
No.
Between these two points, if there's any flow of energy, it's along a curve, it's a great circle.
I'm just thinking of building a several frequency cube octet.
Yeah.
Well, that's a pyramid anyway. And so when you think of any of those edges, you think of them as straight, right? You can't. Listen to the frogs croak as the rain starts.
Oh, the rain. I love it.
So each of those lines, of course, have to be individually at the resolution of structure have to be straight, because it's a pyramid inside of a bigger pyramid inside of a bigger pyramid. How do you make that an arc and maintain the structure? But they're all arcs, every single one of those edges. And it's a resolution. When you look at a pyramid, right, and just a perfect pyramid, each of those unit one lengths of the outside, I mean, if you look at the arc, it's so subtle. It's not, you can't see it. And if you try to structurally, it doesn't, you know, unless you try to make it into a sphere, it doesn't work. But now change the frequency, you know, make it go to a four frequency, create that cube octahedron, and in the center of the cube octahedron, the radial length.
And that is the first time that you have a perfect sphere.
Yeah.
All other spheres are collapsed. All other spheres are concentrated, are compressed.
Yes.
The only sphere that's actually a complete perfect fucking sphere is a cube octahedron. And the only way you get that is a combination of square and triangle. You can't. The closest to it is an icosahedron.
Even to get to that, you need a four frequency
tetrahedron as your basic building block
in order to get the perfect sphere.
Yeah.
so XYZ does not permit that. And then how pi keeps showing up in all these weird places is because unit one is a radial length.
Exactly. The Planck length is a radius.
It's a radius.
And the fact that a radius is equal to the edge length, and what they're measuring is the edge length, they say, oh yeah, the Planck is a tetrahedral edge. Absolutely correct. But necessary, but not sufficient.
Yeah, because even then, when you draw that perfect sphere, that unit one has an arc to make that sphere.
Yeah.
It's not perfect unless unit one is an arc.
Yeah.
The radial length.
And so again, when we talk about flat space, if I'm looking along the radius of the thing, that's flat.
It is.
Inside the sphere, every one of those radiuses is flat.
Yes.
But when it ends at the end, that tiny tip is curved.
Yeah.
And that's what we're measuring. We're trying to measure that curvature, right? At a scale where it doesn't show. Mm-hmm. The scale of the universe is so large that you're actually dealing with what look like straight lines. And you have to recognize they're all part of great circles. But these fucking great circles are so big that you cannot, within a certain resolution, you cannot discriminate between straight and arc.
And the XYZ world, you then have to look at these irrational numbers when you're doing the calculations. You have to round, because that world is literally... It sounds weird because XYZ is a three-dimensional, but it's actually 2D in perspective compared to moving from that everything being a triangle. Again, it's a shift in resolution. Everything being a square, cube, well, all the way down, turtles all the way down. But when you shift and you realize that, that flat line... No, it's not a flat line. It's actually a curve. And all we're doing is we're looking at things. Everything's 60 degrees. Gravity. The pull of gravity. When we calculate to the 90 center.
90 degrees.
We calculate at 90 degrees. And that's where the errors come. That's where the errors come. Because it's a 60 degree pull. It's three dimensional. It's in 60 degrees in every direction. That's where it's like an upside down pyramid when you're looking at gravity.
Exactly. So tetra-octatetra. Lay the tetra-octatetra on a base, right? They're all made of 60 degrees, but the base is 90. It's perpendicular to the ground.
Yeah.
The 90 degrees is constructed out of the 60 degree orientation.
Yeah.
Right?
But our whole universe, when we're trying to measure it, we're on that XYZ plane. And we need to shift. And when you go to the Planck length and you realize that Planck length is the edge of a tetrahedron.
Folded down.
We live in a tetraverse. Right. Yeah.
So when you unfold it out, then the radius is the same as the edge length. That's what the Planck distance is.
Yeah.
Right. Why? Because within a tetrahedron, if the tetrahedral edge was the Planck distance, the tetrahedron itself violates it because the radius of a tetrahedron is less than one.
Mm-hmm.
So the Planck violates itself. No, that's not possible.
A cube universe will collapse upon itself.
Will collapse until you get tetra-octatetra if you use the Planck as a constraint. Right?
Yeah.
If you can collapse to nothing, which is the Einsteinian view, everything is basically an infinite continuous. No broken energy packets, no break.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's flawed too.
And the whole, I think it was David Bohm or Niels Bohr, as well as Buckminster Fuller. There's one quote somewhere I came across that says, XYZ is the, what do you call it? The bane.
I remember that, of
physics.
Yeah.
Right? The adoption of XYZ. So it's not, that conception is not new. But I think we have a way to demonstrate it in a way that without the math and the shit, that, that people can say, yeah, I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, to say X, Y, Z is the bane of physics is to make the complaint, but not to replace it with an assertion that makes sense and we can build the universe from.
Yeah.
Right? So that quote, again, is necessary, but not sufficient. It actually says, yes, our XYZ world is incorrect.
Yeah.
But the next piece is to go to that beat, the start of the universe, that
wave,
those octaves, right? The radial length. And the only way that unit one can be a wave, the only way.
Right, because when you double that, you got the...
It cannot exist in XYZ. It has to be an arc. Have to have that reverberation of unit one that is not just an XYZ straight line.
Yeah.
Unit one is that arc. That is the missing underlying piece.
Right. And the wave that you draw based on XYZ is you're simply drawing the wrong dimension of the wave.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the wave is actually the tetrahedral lattice, not the cubical lattice. The cubical lattice is 90 degrees. The tetrahedral lattice is 60 degrees. That is the difference.
Mm. And that's infinite. When you go to that 60 degrees, that wave just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah.
Because that is what a wave does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Like gravity, it has infinite reach. Now, a wave will eventually dissipate. Call it a wave, right? From the point of the wave, eventually that wave will dissipate. But when you're talking about the concussion of something like the Big Bang, we're 3 degrees Kelvin is the temperature across the universe. The cosmos, right? That's fucking cold, man. That's like 2.5 degrees above absolute zero.
Yeah.
But you see, you cannot get to absolute zero.
No.
Why? Because the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. If you got to absolute zero, you could both tell the momentum and the position of a particle, and that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So something happens. When you get close to zero, nature jiggles. That's why they find out that space is not empty. Right, space is this constant perturbations of these particles coming into existence and out of existence. Yes. And it's all equal. It all equalizes. Nothing is violated in that empty space.
You can do that with temperature, but you can also do that with speed, approaching light speed.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, the relationship to mass is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be the question is, do we have an explanation that fits with the current science? It doesn't violate any of what was being heard, but is comprehensible to a grade 9 or certainly to a university student, any university with basic math, right?
Yeah, and it comes down to geometry.
Yeah.
It comes down to not building things in that linear XYZ.
Yeah, that was Stafford's. When I first talked about the tetrahedral universe, Stafford as a scientist came back and said, you know, but what about all the multiple dimensions? Like in string theory, there are 10 dimensions, right? You're only dealing with the 4 dimensions, 3 of space and 1 of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how do you measure, if those dimensions actually exist, how do you measure them? Large Hadron Collider?
Mm-hmm.
You're measuring them in three-dimensional space. The arbiter of what's happening in multi-dimensional space is our three-dimensional space. That's the fucking observational power that has been granted to us in this universe.
Yeah.
Right? It's a simplification that allows you to actually get into, you know, this stuff is comprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the math is, you know, I mean, even as Neil Turok, right? A fucking theoretical mathematician physicist, right? He says, like, it's just too fucking complicated, man. We keep building these models on and adding more particles and adding and adding and adding. And then you have to fit. Right? Most of these models work because you plug in a number.
Yeah.
The number doesn't come out of the thing. It doesn't predict it. You know that number. You plug the number and it works. Right? So that's you're making it fit. That's Neil Turok's argument about everything. Multiverse, string theory, all of these theories that go beyond the standard model. You have to add something. And Neil is saying, you don't have to add anything. Nature has given us everything that we need. Mm-hmm. But what we're missing is this contextual view of how do we bring it together. And they stumbled upon this 36 fucking abstract fields. And when you plug these 36 fields into the math, everything comes out. The electron, all those five numbers, all the numbers that are absolutely there, and it makes predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Metaphorically, it's the number 42.
That's right. Yeah. That's the answer.
That's the answer. Right? Let's start with the answer, and then let's plug the answer in. And then we can.
And then you rejig all these. Which is still a feat. Right?
It is.
I mean, it's like Einstein and the cosmological constant. Yeah. Einstein is sitting. His fucking equations are telling him the universe is expanding. We couldn't believe it because the universe was not expanding as far as they knew until Hubble.
Yeah.
Right? Hubble took Einstein into the observatory, showed him the red shift. Einstein said, fuck, yes. The biggest error of my life was putting in the cosmological constant, because the cosmological constant is a number that makes the universe static.
It's a resolution.
It cancels out, and that's exactly what dark energy is. He had stumbled on dark energy decades before people even understood anything about this expulsion gravity that expels as opposed to sucks.
Yeah.
That's what dark energy is.
Mm-hmm.
But that number, right, yeah, I mean, and so the Einstein equations, they exist. That's the power of it, right? And then who was the guy who took the equations, worked it out in a certain way, and said, you know, black holes are inevitable.
Yeah.
If these equations are right, black holes will happen.
Is it Hawking that did that?
No. Hawking was the expert about it, but the guy who actually used the term, it wasn't Hawking. The guy that actually ran those. And the same thing they're finding. So it's like the Maxwell equations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is totally about electromagnetism. But the reason why Maxwell is always quoted is because those are the same equations that come through the Einstein equation. You can't model the universe without Maxwell's equations. Right?
Maxwell recognizes... Yeah. That the constant
the fields of electromagnetism, that was the power.
It's a resolution
and the math
problem. It's a resolution problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the math, you were saying?
Right. The math is what stood. That kernel of math exists today as if Maxwell was alive. You cannot dispute. Right? But he was writing about electromagnetic waves. And what they find is that those equations work across the whole spectrum of the universe. In fact, you can't model the universe without Maxwell's equations. That's why that big equation over there, Maxwell's equation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Einstein's relativity, Higgs boson,
yeah.
Right? Those are necessary to get this thing to work. You plug those numbers in and boom, you get your answer.
Well, we don't need all these dimensions because the three dimensions that we were gifted with
is how we observe the universe and how we observe effects in the universe. That's what science is about, right? The effect that's happening.
When we go to XYZ instead, we start to round.
To round, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that resolution is not enough. You need... It's the pyramid. It's the octahedron. That's where the square comes from.
Yeah.
Right.
from inside the tetra is the octa. And the octa is the first thing that says, hang on a second, if I just put sides on my 6 points,
yeah.
I have this thing called a cube.
Yeah.
Right? But the cube has no existence without the tetrahedron.
It doesn't have existence. It's a matter of resolution. So when we start with the cube, we're missing that entire triangle
construct
that built the freaking cube.
Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing. Can you play some music?